life.org.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
Yeah! The Rough Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
Day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, November 24th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We are ready for another great episode here on CannabisRadio.com. So glad you could all join us today. We've got another highlight, a fantastic speech from the International Drug Policy Reform Conference that took place last weekend in Arlington, Virginia, at the Crystal City, which is right there by the Pentagon. And it was Damon Barrett who came to speak about the European perspective on legalization of drugs and harm reduction. And he opened his speech with a very, very, very crushing insight, I should say, on the recent refugee crisis that is plaguing the world, that I shouldn't say plaguing, that is affecting the world here, as the refugees are fleeing Syrian atrocities. We'll let him discuss that as we get into the half past segment in what we'll be calling Across the Pond. Also on the show today, we'll have a chance to have a radical rant because I read something today that really got my blood boiling. It's an op-ed from a guy here in the state of Oregon who claims that since marijuana has become legalized, that means it'll be easier for his son to get ahead in the world because Oregon will be so filled with dopers. So, yeah, we'll take a look at that and dismantle as much of it as we can with the time that we have. Going along that same sort of line in Reefer Madness Debunked today, we're going to do a look at another columnist, this one from the Christian Post, who summoned the ghost of Art Linkletter and the ghost of Richard Nixon. We're going to puncture a hole in the whole notion of social drinking that's used to defend why alcohol is legal and why marijuana is not. Also on the show today, we'll go behind the headlines to take a look at a new effort in California to help conserve water that is being used by the state's pot growers. It involves regulation rather than prohibition. What do you know? Regulation works. We'll take a look at that. But first, we'll get into the cannabis radio news in the headlines from the Associated Press. Today, we've got news from Denver pulling back on their restrictions on their residency. We'll give you the details there. Alaska also taking a look at its residency requirements for marijuana licensees. We've got a case from Illinois where marijuana money has been banned for political contributions. That's getting a First Amendment lawsuit. We've got North Dakota fighting for medical marijuana, needing just a few signatures, but trying to do it with an all-volunteer grassroots effort. And turkey dinners being given away, being raised by a nonprofit here in Oregon that's having trouble getting someone to accept them because they're involved with cannabis. Yes, even when you legalize, it takes a while to erase the stigma. All that's coming up in our first hour. Then in hour two, it's Toker Talk Radio. You can call in live at 971-533-7111. The topics are open, and we'll discuss them right here on the Voice of the Marijuana Nation. It's the Russ Belleville Show.
You're tuned into the Russ Belleville Show, the Voice of the Marijuana Nation.
The son of a Polish immigrant who grew up in a Brooklyn tenement, he went to public schools, then college, where the work of his life began, fighting injustice and inequality, speaking truth to power. He moved to Vermont, won election, and praise as one of America's best mayors. In Congress, he stood up for working families and for principle, opposing the Iraq War, supporting veterans. Now he's taking on Wall Street and a corrupt political system, funded by over a million contributions, tackling climate change to create clean energy jobs, fighting for living wages, equal pay, and tuition-free public colleges.
People are sick and tired of establishment politics, and they want real change.
Bernie Sanders, husband, father, grandfather, an honest leader, building a movement with you to give us a future to believe in.
I'm Bernie Sanders, and I approve this message.
Great websites today need expert web design and development and need to be e-commerce ready and mobile friendly. But building a marketable and profitable website can be an uphill climb. Ready to make your new website or replace your existing website? Think Orange as the new way to get in the black. Orange Hill Development works with Fortune 500 companies and offer the same top quality development service at a fraction of what other providers charge. Brands like Absolute, Carlsberg, and Nestlé trust Orange Hill Development. Find out why you should trust your website with Orange Hill. Contact Orange Hill for a consultation today at orangehilldevelopment.com.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com, featuring reporting from the Associated Press. Now, your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds in the Cannabis Radio News. This is your Cannabis Radio News for Tuesday, November 24th, 2015. Denver City officials pulled back Tuesday from immediately seeking another 2-year moratorium on new players in the city's legal marijuana market, approving instead a 4-month extension to study the issue further. Only existing medical marijuana businesses have been able to open recreational dispensaries, grow houses, or edible manufacturers during the first 2 years of retail pot sales in Colorado. That restriction was set to expire on January 1st, but the city proposed extending it for 2 more years. Several marijuana business owners at Tuesday's 90-minute meeting said limiting the market even for a short time creates problem for those entrepreneurs looking to get into Denver's pot market. Though retail marijuana businesses have been limited to those already with a medical license, there has been an influx of applicants for medical licenses, with no appreciable increase in the number of medical marijuana patient registrations. The Alaska State Marijuana Control Board adopted new rules that could blow the door wide open to outside investment. Marijuana businesses must be 100% Alaskan-owned, but the definition of what makes an Alaskan was changed from matching what is needed to receive a permanent fund dividend to matching voter registration requirements, which is far easier to achieve. The board voted to remove a cap on THC limits for marijuana concentrates. A prior draft version had capped THC at 76%. Marijuana can be packaged in such a way as to allow consumers to see the product before they purchase it in a retail store. Another big change Friday was allowing for marijuana retail licenses to have an area for on-site consumption of marijuana. An adult 21 years or older would purchase marijuana and consume it in a designated area on the store's premises, similar to a bar. Two libertarian political candidates have asked a federal court to declare unconstitutional an Illinois ban on political contributions from the state's new medical marijuana industry. The candidates, Claire Ball of Addison and Scott Schluter of Marion, filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Chicago last week in which they say they support marijuana legalization and want to solicit campaign donations from marijuana businesses. Illinois law bars such contributions. Ball is running for state comptroller. Schluter is running for state representative in Southern Illinois' 117th district. They argue that banning campaign donations from marijuana businesses infringes on the First Amendment's guarantee of free speech, citing, among other cases, the U.S. Supreme Court's 2010 decision in the case known as Citizens United. The ban on political contributions was among concessions sponsors made to pass the bill in 2013, said the former coordinator of the Illinois program. Supporters of a proposed ballot measure to legalize medical marijuana in North Dakota hope to start collecting petition signatures next week, the chairman of the sponsoring committee said. Riley Ray Morgan of Fargo said the corrected version of the petition was expected to be sent by overnight mail Tuesday to Secretary of State Al Jaeger, who will review it and, if everything is right, issue a letter approving the petition for circulation. If Jaeger approves the petition, Morgan said the North Dakota Committee for Medical Marijuana hopes to start gathering next week the 13,452 valid signatures it needs by July 11th to get the statutory measure on the November 2016 general election ballot. He said the group hopes to collect about 15,000 signatures. The group plans to use only volunteers after the last attempt to put medical marijuana on the statewide ballot in 2012 failed because of forged signatures that led to fraud charges against paid petition circulators. An Oregon nonprofit trade organization based on philanthropy has reached out to help during the holiday, but had the offer turned down. The group, Women Leaders in Cannabis, says it's been denied several times. The Eugene office of the Oregon Department of Human Services and two charities said no when the group wanted to donate turkey dinner baskets to clients in need. But they finally found a group who said yes. Kind Tree Autism Rocks is a volunteer group that celebrates people in the autism community. When WLC said they wanted to donate food baskets, Autism Rocks was excited to receive them. The group says they are not concerned about WLC's association with cannabis, and at least $50 worth of food are in each of the baskets and will go to 20 families in need. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Tuesday, November 24th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Imagine life without taxes. Let New Era Certified Public Accountants, NewEraCPAs.com, handle your Cannabusiness 280E and tax strategy. Get your business prepared with New Era CPAs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. NewEraCPAs.com, with years of experience in the industry, we are one of the nation's leading accounting firms for growers, dispensaries, and ancillary companies from Washington to California. NewEraCPAs.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat. More flavor.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines, where we can bring you some breaking news coming out of the state of California and their fight for the legalization of marijuana in 2016. Richard Lee, the founder of Oaksterdam University and the chief proponent of Prop 19 back in 2010, is now endorsing the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, the effort backed by a group of Silicon Valley funders led by Napster co-founder and early Facebook investor Sean Parker. This news comes to us directly from marijuana.com. It's an exclusive broken by Tom Angel. He, of course, is the stellar activist who recently delivered 100,000 petition signatures to the Drug Enforcement Administration, calling for the firing of Chuck Rosenberg for his "medical marijuana is a joke" comments. Now Tom is breaking the news that Richard Lee is going to be endorsing the Sean Parker Marijuana Initiative. And what makes this such interesting news is that Richard Lee is a board member of the Coalition for Cannabis Policy Reform, CCPR, which is also known as Reform CA, Reform California, the Dale Skye Jones-led effort to build a coalition, a consensus to move forward with marijuana legalization in 2013. Richard Lee, in an interview with Tom Angel at marijuana.com, said, quote, "It's important that we all get together to support one initiative, and I believe a majority of the CCPR board is ready to endorse the Parker Initiative at the next board meeting." We shall see how that puts together. That's just your breaking news here in our Behind the Headlines segment. There has not yet been a comment from Dale Skye Jones. did not respond to comment in time for Tom's piece. I'll reach out to Dale as well, see if I can get comment from her before we head into the Thanksgiving holiday. Nate Bradley, who's on the CCPR board, he's the executive director of the California Cannabis Industry Association. They've been endorsing since Sean Parker filed. He says he's very excited about Lee's endorsement. It's important for CCPR to join the coalition so we can all stand in support as one unified voice, Bradley said. This will allow us to work together to make sure the AUMA, Adult Use of Marijuana Act, or the Sean Parker Initiative, is the best drafted initiative it can be. Drug Policy Alliance and Marijuana Policy Project have also signed on to support the Sean Parker Initiative. So it's beginning to look to me, folks, like that's going to be the thing. The Sean Parker Initiative is going to be the way people are going to move forward in legalization in California. Now, I know there's other initiatives out there, most specifically the Jack Herer Initiative, which would be the most wide-ranging and sweeping marijuana legalization possible. But the big money is going to go toward a legalization initiative that comports with the Cole Memorandum that gives us some measure of cover from the federal government stomping all over these legalization efforts. And when it comes to California, it's far too big a prize for us to be moving forward with the most radical of legalization proposals. It's really just tilting at windmills at this point, since I really don't believe that the Jack Herer Initiative has any sort of chance of making the ballot in California. The amount of money it is going to take to be able to get the signatures to get on the ballot is just staggering. And when you look at the Sean Parker group, in addition to Sean Parker being worth somewhere around $3 billion net worth himself, other people that are involved in this include the Pritzker family, members of the Pritzker family. Now, those names don't sound familiar, just do some Googling. They are heirs to the Hyatt hotel chain. So kind of like Paris Hilton-ish, but a different hotel chain, right? Nick and Joby Pritzker. And last time I looked, I can't remember the number of them, but there was more than three or four Pritzkers in the most rich families in America list. Plus, you got Graham Boyd, who is basically the man who advises the Peter Lewis estate, the progressive insurance billionaire. So the big money is already beginning to coalesce behind this Adult Use of Marijuana Act. And given what's already passed in four states, and some of this progress that these states are making, like Alaska allowing for on-site consumption, I think bodes well for being able to write those kind of progressive sorts of legalization initiatives and get that passed in the state of California, set the precedent for the rest of the nation as we move forward into a future of marijuana legalization.
What are you people? On dope?
Well, yeah, a little. That's kind of my job, isn't it? Hey, folks, it's 20 after. That means it's 4:20 in the Mountain Time Zone, live here from CannabisRadio.com with my new handy telephone attachment for my cell phone. It's so 20th century. It makes me glow. We're back with some reefer madness to debunk right after this.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Ganjapreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Ganjapreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Ganjapreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Gondrepreneur.com, helping gondrepreneurs grow.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he'd drop dead from fright.
You know, it's not easy countering 7 decades of propaganda in a 2-hour show, but let's try. It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Reefer Madness Debunked.
All right, folks, we got to jump head first into this one. It's a column from the Christian Post entitled More on Marijuana Madness, and it's a follow-up to a column they printed earlier called Marijuana Madness. The column here is written by John Stone Street. So I love the name. Stone Street works for me. And John complained about the rush, the accelerating push for legalization, and said we ought to slow down here. Why such a rush? Because one, marijuana use is addictive, and two, marijuana use may produce deeply pathologic consequences. Okay, well, first of all, I love this idea. Why the rush to legalize marijuana? As if Keith Strop hasn't been trying to do this since 1971. That, you know, 44 years is no rush, John Stone Street. It's a snail's pace. And this idea that marijuana is this brand new thing. Oh my God, we better not rush into it. Suddenly there's this new thing called marijuana. We better start taking a look at it. As if there's not over 20,000 published studies on PubMed, peer-reviewed studies, scientific studies, meta-analyses, etc. on PubMed. You just go to the search, you type in C-A-N-N-I-B asterisk, you get cannabidiol, cannabinoids, cannabis, anything with a cannab in it. You get over 20,000 studies. And as if we don't have 7,000 years of recorded human history with this plant. So don't give me this, oh, we got to slow down, we got to study it, oh, there's just not enough information. Give me a break. But I had to laugh because he was shocked by how much commentary they received on Facebook in response to their original Marijuana Madness. And they have to defend themselves saying, no, we don't support harsh punishment for marijuana smokers. And no, we don't really imprison a whole lot of marijuana smokers. Only 400 of them for possession alone. Well, yeah, still, that's 400 too many, and it ignores all the collateral consequences and the fact that people end up in prison because of marijuana's prohibition that don't actually show up as just marijuana prohibition, marijuana possession. All sorts of ways we can debunk that. It also says, oh, we need to explore the medical benefits of marijuana, but that's different from the intent to get high. And also says that a lot of the Facebook commenters complained that cigarettes and pharmaceutical drugs and alcohol are far more dangerous. And this is where we start to get into his reefer madness. He says, these folks have a point, but saying other substances are also dangerous doesn't change at all whether pot is dangerous, does it? And he goes in here to the very, this point, which is what I call the Art Linkletter gambit. Refers to a conversation Art Linkletter and Richard Nixon had that was captured on the Nixon tapes, the White House tapes. And it illustrates this very, very important point to the prohibitionist, to the Puritan, when it comes to their understanding of marijuana. And he says, quote, it is, and even then, while abuse and addiction is always bad, there is this difference. Abuse and addiction are always bad. There is this difference between the substances mentioned by our critics and pot. It is possible to use tobacco and alcohol with an intent other than to get high, but the only intent in using marijuana recreationally is to get high. It's the old Art Linkletter, Richard Nixon. Drinkers drink to be social. Tokers smoke to get high. Well, every time someone brings up this idea that alcohol and tobacco are being used by people for reasons other than the pharmacological effect of those substances, I ask them this. Next time you have your little gathering, your little event, your little party, your little soiree, replace all the beer with O'Doul's non-alcoholic beer. Replace all the bourbon with iced tea. Replace all of the wine with grape juice. And replace all of the cigarettes with those little e-cigarette vaporizers that just give you vapor, like a flavored vapor with no nicotine in it. Make those replacements and tell me how well your people at the event achieve their other intents than getting high. See, what happens is these people don't understand that the effect you are feeling from a drug is the reason why you use it. That includes sugar, folks. You use sugar for a reason for the effect you get from it. Drinkers are drinking the alcohol to get the pharmacological effect of alcohol. Smokers smoke cigarettes to get the pharmacological effect of nicotine, the buzz, the rush, the energy they get from it. And cannabis consumers use marijuana to get the mellowing effects, to get the relaxation effects. And if you keep going, yes, maybe perhaps get high as well. But there's so many gradations and such a spectrum that we can refuse to take a look at in that frame. These people they completely understand the difference between a social drink and getting tipsy and getting buzzed and getting drunk, and that they're a variation of those levels. The same thing exists for marijuana consumption. Gotta get that off my chest. I get so tired of that talking point. All right, when we come back, we've got Across the Pond for you with a very dedicated activist. Man from Ireland, Damon Barrett, coming up next, talking about reform in the UK.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Your connection to quality cannabis insurance services is spelled
K-A-E-R-C-H-E-R.
That's Karcher Insurance. We have worked with ventures like cannabis for over 60 years. We're proud to represent over 50 companies with tailor-made cannabis business plans for owners just like you to ensure your product, your plants, and your pursuits.
K-A-E-R-C-H-E-R
spells out their full-service insurance services, ranging from commercial to bonds to personal, from life to health and more. Contact the team at KarcherInsurance.com and let our experience work for you. That's KarcherInsurance.com.
Contact Karen and the team at Karcher Insurance at 1-844-421-3560. That's 844-421-3560.
One of America's leading exports over the past 50 years has been the global war on drugs. Through UN treaties, we have bent the world to accept our marijuana prohibition. Learn how our allies in Europe are fighting for their freedom as we go across the pond.
And now back to Reform Conference 2015.
Good morning and welcome. That was beautiful, the memoriam, and I really appreciate Melissa Frankie, who worked so hard on that, pulling that together. It's a great honor, so acknowledging you for your work. When I first came to work for the Drug Policy Alliance, it was actually in 2000, and that was so long ago that DPA was still called the Lindesmith Center, and it was a project of the Open Society Foundations, housed in a tiny basement on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And I was brought on as a consultant to pull together programs for these massive media events convened by Arianna Huffington that were meant to put opposition to the drug war into the national spotlight. At the time, I thought I knew very little about drug policy. My background was in international human rights, but I was charged with pulling together the program for these events that were meant to inspire the uninitiated and get them to care about this issue. And in the process, I found myself becoming very passionate about this cause. I met Gus Smith, the father of Kemba Smith, the remarkable woman you met yesterday at the morning plenary, when he came to speak at one of the events to advocate on her behalf because Kemba was still incarcerated. I met medical marijuana patients fighting so hard for the medicine they needed to survive. I met people from Latin America whose lives were devastated by the violence caused by the drug war and prohibition throughout the region. And I met drug users who were pushed to the margins of society and denied basic humanity and dignity. I came to realize that this was all connected to my own life, my own community, my family, and the impact and the harms the drug war had had upon us. And not only was the drug war a human rights issue, but one of the principal instruments of violating human rights around the globe that affects each and every one of us. So it's my honor to be here today to present a series of incredible speakers who are really fortunate to have with us today, who will talk to you about the impact of the drug war across the globe and its impact on human rights. So please join me in welcoming the first of these speakers. It's Damon Barrett who's joining us. He's a co-founder and director of the International Center on Human Rights and Drug Policy based at the Human Rights Center at the University of Essex, where he's visiting fellow. From 2007 to 2014, he worked at Harm Reduction International, leading the organization's human rights strategy, and as deputy director from 2012 to 2014. He is now a PhD researcher at the University of Stockholm, and he lives in, and he helped me in pronouncing this, Gothenburg, Stockholm, Sweden. It's not easy to say, looks like a different way than it's pronounced. Thank you, Sweden, for being hard for us. But Gothenburg, Sweden is where he lives. So join me in welcoming Damon Barrett.
That is a big room. Okay, for a little man. Gurv Mahagut, Sharda, and Di Iver Majina Korja. Thank you, Sharda, and good morning, friends. I begin in Irish to have a little detour, if you don't mind, in the light of events yesterday in Congress. I saw Congress people with names like Connolly and Fitzpatrick and Murphy passing an act that will stop refugees coming into this country. And 170 years ago, Irish people fled famine and repression in their hundreds of thousands and came here. And I, as babies are being washed up on the shores of the Mediterranean, I ask if they've got no sense of history and no shame. So, listen, speaking of Ireland, okay, Catholic Ireland, we legalized same-sex marriage through a constitutional referendum, recognized the legal status of transgender people, and are probably having safe injection facilities next year. So things change, right? These are not things the Vatican likes. But as I speak, there are more than 10 million people in penal institutions around the world. And we don't know how many, but it's likely millions for drug offenses. Right now, we're going to miss global HIV targets by decades. Decades, because we flush our money down the ineffective and abusive sinkhole of enforcement rather than investing in harm reduction. We, right now, billions, four-fifths of the planet, mostly in the developing world, have little or no access to basic medicines for pain. This is people with cancer, people who have been in accidents or undergone surgery. Right now, hundreds of thousands of people are displaced because of drug-related violence, perhaps millions, and crop eradication campaigns. And on average, today, tomorrow, the next day, and for the rest of the year, two or three people will be executed for drug offenses in the world. So, we could read the human rights indictment of the drug war all day. In fact, many of you have experienced its worst abuses. And you could read your own indictment. And here's the kicker. If this were a trial, If this were that, all of these facts would be stipulated by the other side. Nobody denies it's happening. The only disagreement is what's driving it, who's to blame, and what drug policy reform can do about it. So that's what I'd like to speak to, and a whole conference could go on this, but I'm going to focus on the international regime. But through that, I hope there's some resonance with national systems. So I know talking about treaties can be tedious and boring, but I want to just make two important points. The first is that international law and treaties matter. They do important things. The Refugee Convention is more important than ever. But like any other legal system, there's good laws and there's bad laws. And in this case, we have three drugs treaties which enshrine a certain strategy for how to deal with drugs. And what they require states to do is hugely risky from a human rights perspective. So let's look at why. States have to ban private behaviors. They have to ban indigenous people from doing what they've been doing for millennia. They have to stop religious minorities from pursuing their beliefs. They have to conduct surveillance, arrest people, prosecute them, extradite them. They have to eradicate crops. They have to ban certain forms of expression because of an ill-defined idea of incitement to use drugs. This is what was signed up to. And it's done, and it's all carried out under a so-called principle of shared responsibility. This has been the wording for many, many decades in the UN, and usually used to resist reform. We have shared responsibility to control drugs. Well, who takes shared responsibility for everything I just listed? Who takes shared responsibility? Who shares it for the human rights consequences of what's happening? Ethan said yesterday, everyone went along, right? Well, no matter what they say now, and no matter how friendly some of our governments are, they went along too. And they went along for decades, so everyone, every state, has to answer for it. Because it's too easy to say, look at China, look what they do. Look at Indonesia and who they execute. Look at Mexico and its violence. But if you prop up the system that creates the infrastructure in which that takes place, it's your fault too. So I think that recognizing past errors is cathartic and it's important. And that includes governments who maybe now see some flaws in this system and want to change it. They have to recognize their own responsibility in creating it. In the In Memoriam, we saw Niels Christie. Well, Niels Christie didn't just refer to drugs as a good enemy. He said it was a perfect enemy. Because a perfect enemy sets up an extraordinary threat that requires extraordinary responses. It doesn't ever die. It never goes away. And it's a moving target. So we had opium, we had marijuana, we had cocaine, crack, novel psychoactive substances, and so on. And the thing is, this is a huge human rights problem, because if you identify an extraordinary threat, point the finger at who's to blame for it, human rights abuses are coming, and they're exceptionally easy to justify. And a final point about a perfect enemy. The extraordinary responses should not be those that threaten the powerful. So it helps to justify the abuses if the victims are minorities. It helps if they're in the global south. And connecting the dots, it really helps if they're poor. And that's what we have. Today, in fact, I'm going to a film screening. There's a fantastic man called Albie Sachs who's speaking. He was a judge on the Constitutional Court of South Africa, and before that, an anti-apartheid freedom fighter. Now, in 2002, he wrote a wonderful dissent in a case about cannabis use among the Rastafari. The majority of the court said that a religious exemption for this already maligned religious minority would threaten the broad prohibition that was in place, and it would undermine South Africa's ability to live up to its treaty obligations. Sachs said, no, hang on. This goes against the tolerance of diversity that is central to the entire constitutional project. And this is important, it represented a thumb on the scales for ease of law enforcement. Now, that for me is an important lesson, because that's exactly what the UN drug control treaties are. And importantly, that's what they were intended to be, especially the Drug Trafficking Convention. It was intended to make enforcement easier. And this, for me, is an enormous human rights problem, because part of the human rights movement is to resist the arbitrary, capricious overreach of state power into our lives. And the treaties, in many ways, legitimize that, make it stronger in international law. And that's a major problem for these treaties. And I think a taboo, if we're going to break them, that likely wouldn't come up at the UNGAS next year. If the treaties and if drug control is a thumb on the scales for ease of law enforcement, then our job in solidarity is to put all of our weight on the other side of the scales, surely. And doing that requires considerably more than arguments about personal freedom. It requires considerably more, because a person, in fact, because I mentioned it, in apartheid South Africa, they used to say, no freedom without bread, and no bread without freedom. A starving person is not free. A person working 3 minimum wage jobs is not fully free. When people's life chances, their opportunities are so curtailed by poverty, they are not truly free. And I'm talking, of course, about economic and social rights, not just civil rights, for what we do and how important it is. You know, even if we look at drug dependence, there was a time when people thought addiction, if we want to call it that, was all about the dependence-producing properties of substances. And we know now that's not the case. We know there's a role, but there's so much environmental and social factors going into that. And economic and social rights legislate better for that than any drug law can. So, personal freedom is really important, but not enough. And marijuana reform is important, but not nearly enough. And you know what? Drug policy reform, I don't think, is enough, because the damage the drug war has done is so far-reaching. And the causes of so much of the things we care about that lead us into this movement have something to do with something else. So, Ethan, I think yesterday asked, you know, how do we know when we've won, or what does victory look like? I don't know, but I do know this. I won't back off on human rights. I won't do that, so I'll stick to my principles. I also know this, that once the drug war gets out of the way, we're going to have so much more left to do in solidarity with others. But our job will be a lot easier than it currently is. Now, I began 170 years ago. I'm going to go back further. According to the Spanish artist Goya, the sleep of reason produces monsters. Or, as he clarified, the imagination without reason will bring about impossible monsters. Now, people stood at this podium yesterday and described things that happened to them that should be impossible in a free society, that should be impossible. Life without parole for nonviolent offense, this should be impossible. But the imagination of a drug-free world has brought about its impossible monsters. But I think that HIV made a big noise and started to wake up reason in drug control. And harm reduction has become like that little buzzing alarm clock on snooze mode, reminding reason every 3 minutes or so to wake the hell up. And I think that human rights, the human rights consequences of the drug war now, it's more like a fire alarm. And there's no sleep anymore possible. And reason has to not only wake up, but stand up. And, you know, Goya's image was actually imagination and reason combined will bring about wonders. So I think that if we can campaign for life of dignity for everybody in solidarity with them, and if we reject state repression in the name of social policy, and if we reject the legitimization of that level of state power through international law, then I think we combine our reason, everything we know from all of these decades, with our imagination for the world we want. And in that way, I think we'll have impact beyond our drug strategies and for the human rights movement way beyond this room. So that's what I have to say. And just, I should say that England, or English, is in the house. So thank you very much. Ireland is in the house. So gorav mila mahagwiv galer. And Sweden is in the house. So tack så jättemycket.
Damon Barrett speaking at the International Drug Policy Reform Conference in Arlington, Virginia, this past Friday. All right, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll have time to wrap up hour one with a radical rant directed to an Oregonian who has written an op-ed on how much better the job market's going to be for his kid now that we legalize pot and everybody's getting high. Got a few things to say about that. Stay tuned.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show, the national wildlife refuge for marijuana unicorns.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
MJWellness.com, the largest medical marijuana community in the world. Connect with thousands of patients, doctors, industry leaders, and businesses through shared personal experiences along our worldwide network. Discover new therapies and benefits with content tailored to you. Come grow your network on MJWellness.com. You're not alone. Your wellness matters. Learn, live, and thrive. Check out MJWellness.com today.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back. Today's rant subject comes to us from Patrick Fletchall, who has written an article on thefederalist.com entitled, "Legalized Marijuana Just Smoked My Son's Job Prospects Through the Roof." Subtitle, "Thanks to the legalization of marijuana in Oregon, my son will find a less competitive job market." Okay. So the first thing right off the bat, let's make sure we understand this is he's an admissions counselor at the University of Oregon, has a Master of Theological Studies from Boston University and a Master of Philosophy from the University of Aberdeen. And Patrick here is worried. He was originally worried about this. He says, and right off the bat, you know, it's hard to take him seriously when he writes this. "As a libertarian, I don't want the government dictating my personal choices. As a voter, however, I was disappointed when Oregon chose to legalize a mind-altering drug." How can you hold those two thoughts in your head at the same time and not explode like the guy from Scanners? As a libertarian, okay, Mr. Libertarian, if you don't want the government dictating your personal choices, what the hell business does the government have dictating your personal choice to use marijuana? A plant that comes out of the ground, okay? Now, if you wanted to make, if you wanted to, you know, set your battle flag on manufactured drugs, concentrates or cocaine or heroin, something that requires a man to take and synthesize a natural plant, you might have the bare thinnest thread to hang your argument on. But a natural, non-toxic healing herb and government, you think government has the right to declare that forbidden? And I get the feeling you've got some theological study here, right? That was in your background, theological study. Do you remember the story of the first prohibition? God told Adam and Eve, do not eat from the tree of knowledge. Don't eat that apple, Eve. How well did that prohibition work out? We're talking about the number one most powerful prosecutor, police officer, judge, imprisoner, punisher there is, God. And he couldn't maintain prohibition. All right. So I also like his little parenthetical. He said, he was disappointed when Oregon, more specifically Portland, Salem, Eugene, and Ashland voters, you know, people who live in cities where there's like libraries and education and commerce going on, chose to legalize a mind-altering drug. So, as he goes along here, he says, he's got a heading, parents do follow kids' example. And he says, I'm comforted that medical research centers like the National Institutes of Health report that children raised by parents who abuse drugs are almost 80% more likely to become drug abusers themselves. While certainly a sad statistic, it also means my son is much less likely to become a pothead. Okay, so Patrick, let's just get some of this terminology correct here. 80% more likely to become a drug user themselves, somebody who might consume drugs because they were raised in a family that recognizes that it's okay to use drugs. People use alcohol, people use tobacco, people use sugar, people use Xanax, people use painkillers. We are drug-free. You're going to raise your kid in a drug-free home. I bet I can find five drugs in your home. Right off the bat, I can find five drugs in your home having never been there. Oh, but that's different, right? Because those are medicines, or that's caffeine, or that's trans fats, or whatever else that you don't consider to be drugs, but most certainly are, and more likely to be harmful than the marijuana that you're railing about. He goes on to rail on the recreational marijuana stores and then has this line. I pondered the environments these children will experience as they are taught the prevalent myth that weed is the same as or healthier than alcohol. Prevalent myth. Let's just get one thing straight here. Marijuana is safer than alcohol. It doesn't matter what you want to measure. He's got a couple of hyperlinks here that go to these little studies that say this, that, or the other thing. And whatever harm they want to stipulate from marijuana is a harm that alcohol use creates in spades. They want to play this straw man argument, right? Well, they say marijuana is harmless. Well, marijuana is not harmless. Who says marijuana is harmless? I'm not saying marijuana is harmless. I'm not saying water's harmless or sugar's harmless or fat is harmless or eating red meat is harmless. No, I won't say any of those things. Every substance we put into our bodies has the potential for harm, especially a substance that's mind or mood altering. So no, I don't say marijuana is harmless, but compared to alcohol, far less harmful. And it's not even a debate. You can't debate this. This isn't like, well, this is this guy's opinion, this guy's opinion. No, it's just fact. It's just fact. It's just the fact that alcohol can kill you from a toxic overdose. Alcohol can kill you from a withdrawal if you're an alcoholic. Neither of those things can happen from marijuana. But then he goes on in his heading, the stats look bad for smokers, talking about unemployment and all of that, and making a federalist type argument here as far as, you know, too many regulations are scaring the businesses away. But the point that's salient to our talk here is, shockingly, research has shown that marijuana users have poor job performance. They report sick more frequently due to immune deficiency. Immune deficiency. Yeah, that's why there's so many of those medical marijuana states that allow you to use medical marijuana for AIDS. Because marijuana gives you an immune deficiency. The idiocy these people actually believe. He continues saying, have trouble with memory retention. They lack work ethic and function at a reduced intellectual level most of the time. Oh, really? The challenge is still open. You, what's his name from Project Sam, Oregon? I don't care. Any one of you. Put together your mental challenge, a game of Jeopardy, Trivial Pursuit, chess, I don't care. And let's play. Sudoku, crossword puzzles, Scrabble, let's go. If, after all, I'm functioning at a reduced intellectual level most of the time. And this idea of lack of work ethic. I have been on the road 100 days this year, 60,000 air miles to 33 cities. I've produced over 200 articles this year alone. I've produced at least 200 shows this year. Please tell me more about lack of work ethic and reporting to work sick. Please tell me more about that. So his point is that his son is going to be drug free. And he says, from an employability perspective, it's never been a better time to be drug free. Combined with the fact that marijuana users, male or female, have an increased likelihood of sterility, my odds for raising a professionally successful son jumped dramatically on October 1st. Ha! Yes, yeah, sterility. That explains why Bob Marley has 12 kids. No, that's complete bullshit as well. Marijuana consumers have plenty of kids. Have you ever seen a hippie festival? Have you ever seen those little tie-dye kids running around? Clearly, we're having no trouble reproducing. He concludes by saying, my son may not grow up to be the smartest person in the room or the most educated or even the best looking, but he'll now statistically get a leg up on the competition. Now, he likely won't even need to be the most qualified. And that's the cap right on it for me. He admits that the more qualified people than his son will be locked out of the job market because of drug testing, because of these continued stigma against marijuana users that he's more than happy to promulgate. Well, what's going to happen here is eventually companies are going to recognize when they don't drug test, they get some pretty damn good workers, pretty talented people, pretty smart people. And they'll start to get a leg up on these businesses that maintain these anti-American unconstitutional practices of seizing our urine to determine our fitness for employment. It's offensive and it needs to end. Thanks for joining us, everyone. That's hour one in the books. Stay tuned for hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We take your calls live at 971-533-7111. For everyone here at Rolladay Studios and CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you